Kingston. Looking to conserve water and save money? Utilities Kingston is once again offering its popular repurposed rain barrels. They help conserve treated water, reduce your environmental impact, and give new life to materials that might otherwise end up in a landfill. Rain barrels are just $71, including delivery, and are sold at cost to support sustainable water conservation. Order yours today at utilitieskingston.com/rainbarrels.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
Hi, this is Ira from Yola Tango. You're listening to CFRC 101.9, Queens University in Kingston, the birthplace of reggae.
Hey everyone, it's 3 p.m. and you're listening to the Kingston Curator on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Ellie Sturton, the host of the Kingston Curator, and every Friday, 3 p.m., you can join me for all things arts. Tune in to hear interviews with local artists, authors, musicians, and more. I talk about the latest arts news and upcoming events. You won't want to miss it. Today, I'm going to start by giving you a brief rundown of what's happening. Hey everyone, it's 3 p.m. and you're listening to the Kingston Curator on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Ellie Sturton, the host of the Kingston Curator, and every Friday, 3 p.m., you can join me for all things arts. Tune in to hear interviews with local artists, authors, musicians, and more. I talk about the latest arts news and upcoming events. You won't want to miss it. Today, I'm going to start by giving you a brief rundown of what's happening around town this weekend, and then we'll get into some interviews. Today I'm talking about the Kick and Push Festival, running July 24th to August 17th in Kingston. It features one-of-a-kind, unexpected, and immersive theater pieces. I had the pleasure of talking with Craig Walker, who is the writer and director of one show called Providence. I also got to talk with an actor from the show Providence, Aidan Robert Bruce. Then I sat down with BC Gorey from 6AM Productions to discuss his show Love in the First Degree, and it will be showing later in the festival season. Alright, so coming up are your live music events happening around town this weekend. On Friday, it's the kickoff of the 51st annual Blue Skies Music Festival in Clarendon, a full weekend of folk, roots, and bluegrass. Festival passes are by lottery, so email tickets at blueskiesmusicfestival.ca if you're hoping to attend. And back in Kingston, catch the Retro Kings at the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. for a set of soft rock classics and originals. Then at 7 p.m., Tegan McLaren performs a free show in Springer Market Square as a part of the Kickin' It Country concert series. On Saturday, Blue Skies Music Fest continues in Clarendon, and so do the good vibes in downtown Kingston, with Saturday sessions running from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m. in Confederation Park. See Michael K. Myers, Jeff J. Galton, and the Oscar Evans Quartet. Folks can also see Down with Webster take the stage at Base 31 in Picton at 7:30 p.m. Tickets range from $69 to $149. Finally, at the Mansion, Kingston's own Exogen plays an alt-metal set with special guest Midas at 9 p.m. It's their only show this summer, and tickets are just $10. And wrapping up the week on Sunday, the jazz brunch at Black Dog Tavern runs from 11:30 to 2:30 p.m. with Chantal Thompson and the Black Dog All-Stars. Swing by Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar to see Savannah Shea playing a warm set of folk, pop, and indie originals from 2 to 4 p.m. The Blue Skies Music Fest has its final day, and out in Bath, Live Music Sundays runs from 2 to 5 p.m. at Finkel's Shore Park. And out in Bath, Live Music Sundays runs from 2 to 5 p.m. at Finkel's Shore Park with Borgen and Benny, Lucanus Pell, and the Andrew Mack Band. Got a local concert or music event that you would like us to share on air? Head to CFRC.ca and let us know. And now let's hear about some great community events happening around town this weekend. On Friday, dust off your boots for a free square and line dancing lesson in Springer Market Square from 6 to 7 p.m. No experience needed, just show up and have fun. On Saturday, it's the return of the Princess Street Promenade from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Over 100 local businesses and community groups will fill Princess Street with deals, foods, games, and surprises. And don't miss the Montreal Street Vintage Market, running as a part of the Princess Street Promenade, with over 20 local vendors offering handmade and secondhand treasures. It's on Montreal Street between Princess and Queen. And if you missed the musical earlier this week, Merrily We Roll Along is still on at Domino Theatre. And on Sunday, start your day with a free yoga lesson from 10 to 11 a.m. in Battery Park. Just bring your mat and enjoy some mindful movement by the lake. And if you're up for a little road trip, head to Gananoque for Molière dans le Parc at 3 p.m. in Town Park. This free outdoor performance of L'École des Femmes gives a modern twist to the Molière classic as a part of Festival. Have a community event you would like featured on CFRC's news programming and website? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Those were the events and concerts that folks can look forward to this weekend. And now, coming up on the Kingston Curator, you'll hear a conversation between myself, Ellie Sturton, and Professor Craig Walker. He is the writer and director of the show Providence, playing as a part of the Kick and Push Festival from July 25th to August 3rd. It's a site-specific work about rail workers in 1875. In this interview, we talk all about Craig's inspirations, his creative process, and what site-specific theater is really all about. Professor Craig Walker, you are the writer and director of Providence, playing as a part of the Kick and Push Festival this year.
Correct.
Just to start off, could you give me a brief summary about what your show Providence is and what it's all about?
Sure. The Kick and Push Festival takes its name from a nickname from the old Kingston Pembroke Railway, which, despite its name, never ran as far as Pembroke. It started in Kingston, but the furthest it ever got was Renfrew. Anyhow, that railway started 150 years ago this summer. So my play is about workers on the railway who have been building the railway. And historically, almost all the workers were Irish or Scottish immigrants at that point. And some of them had been, well, I guess I don't need to go into all the details. Some of them had been working on the national railway, you know, the big national dream of the coast-to-coast Canadian railway. When John A. MacDonald was voted out of office, that project was off. So a lot of them came and worked on the Kingston Pembroke Railway. What really inspired me, right at the entrance to the K&P Trail off of Dalton Avenue, there's a sign, an information sign that tells you about the K&P Railway, how the, you know, the trail is named for that. And that its nickname was Kick and Push. And it has on the back of that sign a photograph of three workmen and, strangely, a little girl in front of them. You know, so clearly the men have been working on the railway, and you, one assumes that the girl is the daughter of one of the men. And I would see that every day, and during the pandemic especially, I was going for walks every single day along that trail, and I would think about that photograph and think, who are these men? What are they doing? What was the what were their lives like, and why was the photograph taken? So I started imagining answers to that, and I thought, maybe there'd be a good play here. The other thing that fed into my thinking about the play was when I was on holiday in Ireland a few years ago, and I was in Galway, my wife and I were staying at a place that right across the street had this little pub with a patio, and we went over there one evening, and there were these three Irish guys sitting at the table next to us, and one of them had this big black lab. And, you know, they seemed charming and so on. And then we suddenly realized that the guy was calling his dog Margaret Atwood. Never just Margaret, it was always Margaret Atwood. And so, naturally we said, hey, your dog is called Margaret Atwood. We're from Canada. And that started a conversation. But partway through, it got a little bit uncomfortable when one of them said, I don't know how you Canadians can still stand to have a monarch as head of state. And the two other guys kind of froze a little bit. And, I could have just laughed it off. I could have brushed off the question. But I thought, well, I'm a proud Canadian. And I started answering. That was the other thing that fed into this. I'd been thinking about the situation of people who immigrate to Canada and the tradition that they're buying into. That, you know, somebody who's Irish, who immigrates to Canada as opposed to the United States, is adopting a very different political tradition. And so in my play, two of the workmen are, I use the sign as inspiration. So two of the workmen are Irish, one of them is Scottish, and then there's the daughter of one of the men. And the play starts out with that, or the girl and the Scotsman just having a conversation on the trail. And it's a kind of a mystery. I don't want to give away too much of it. The other thing that's significant is within Kingston, there's only one very short stretch of the original railway that's still there intact. And it's only about 20 feet long. And that's exactly where we're doing the play, right on the last bit of the railway that's in Kingston.
Being a site-specific work, how has that affected the creation and the directing process?
Well, it has a big effect because, in a sense, you know, you've got the set is already half done in the sense you've got a ground plan, right? You know, you've got these rails, and the ties are all sort of laid out there, and you've got to work around those. So that's going to dictate a little bit of what you do. And I guess the other thing that's significant about it is that the backdrop to it is all sort of natural. And, you know, when we first looked at the site, that backdrop covered everything. You know, the whole site was really overgrown. There's a lot of weed trees growing through the tracks and so on. So we cut all that back so that you could see the tracks. And the area was clear. And once that was done, and it was a lot of work to do that, a lot of work. Once it was done, it looks like a very attractive little sort of natural amphitheater. You come off of the trail and it's just a slope that goes down for about 3 feet or whatever. And then there's these tracks and then the trees sort of crowding in around it still are the backdrop. So it's, for me, I kind of think it feels a little bit like, in a fairy tale or whatever, where they come across a house or some magical place unexpectedly in a forest.
I mean, what an interesting and intriguing venue for a play. I wanted to ask, how do audience members get to this venue? Are they led through a path or, what's the experience for an audience member?
Yeah, basically direct people to the intersection of Hickson Avenue and Hagerman Avenue, which are not exactly big streets, but people can find those easily enough on Google Maps. And then once you're at that intersection, you just sort of follow the trail up, I don't know, but maybe about 100 or 200 meters, and you're at the site. You know, inherently, you have to walk along the trail a little bit. And of course, there's still people using the trail while the play is going on. You know, there's pedestrians and people with their dogs and cyclists coming along and so on. People are pretty considerate.
It opened a few days ago.
Mm-hmm, yes.
How has that been going?
It's gone very well. You know, we sold out the first show. On Sunday, we did our first matinee, and it was so hot, we were wondering if anybody would come because, you know, the idea of sitting outdoors with that. Fortunately, there ended up being a bit of a breeze and we had a canopy covering the audience. So I spoke to people and they were comfortable. That was sort of a smaller audience, but it still works very well, even with a small audience, because it was around 10 people. It's still quite, because it's so intimate, you know, the actors are just a few feet away from you. It seems to work very well. And there's a lot of comedy in the play. Aiden, who you'll be speaking to, is very, very funny in the play. And there was still a lot of laughter, even though there was that small group. And I think it's something about intimately sharing the story amongst a small group of people that sober, it feels like a kind of a friendly thing. What I asked for was seating that would accommodate no more than 50, because I wanted that sort of intimate feeling of it. You know, once a lot more people at it, site-specific doesn't work quite as well. Because what you want from people is for them to make an association with this space forever afterwards, right? That 10 years on, when they're in Kingston and they come near that spot, they think, oh yeah, that's where that play was. And now I know something of this story, I know something about the history, and the place is meaningful to me now, right? And that's what you want. But it's hard to do that with a huge group of people for some reason. You just don't, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it's personally important in the way that is when it's a smaller audience.
Yeah, I completely understand that. It's more intimate and more human connection, I guess, that leaves that emotional impact on people.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I would say that site-specific theater is one of the specialties of the Kick and Push Festival. Not everything is site-specific, but it's one of the things that they've done from the beginning, and it's always been interesting to me for that reason, because of what I was saying about, you know, having the place in which you live, different little places within that city brought to life and animated and made special, you know?
Yeah.
And the part of the Kick and Push that probably attracts the most people is the Fringe Festival, which happens a little bit later this year. So there's all these Fringe shows that will be going on downtown in various locations.
Kick and Push in general, just for people listening, it is a wonderful summer festival. There's always a lot of diverse work. And it sounds like Providence is a shining star in the festival this year. I've seen some reviews from the CBC already. People are loving it. So if you have a chance, definitely go out and see it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Ellie.
It's been a pleasure.
You just heard an interview between Professor Craig Walker and myself, Ellie Sturton, discussing his show Providence, playing at the Kick and Push Festival. Now that we've heard the director's side, it's time to take a look at the actors in Providence. Joining me today is Aidan Robert Bruce, discussing what it's like to act in a site-specific work and what it's like to be a part of the Kick and Push Festival in general. So today I'm joined by Aidan Robert Bruce, who is an actor in the show Providence, written and directed by Craig Walker. You just heard me and Craig chatting about his inspirations, and now Aidan and I are going to chat about the show run and what it's like to be an actor in this site-specific work. So welcome, Aidan. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I guess to start off, can you tell me what you're doing in Providence?
Yeah, I am one of the performers. I play Brendan Malloy. He's a railway worker who isn't always the brightest bulb, but he's a good guy.
So I heard that these characters are Irish and Scottish. Do you do an accent in the show?
I do. I do an Irish accent that is just passable, I want to say.
Could you give us a taste, or is that too much pressure?
Oh, geez. No, me ma would fetch him from the depot in the dog cart. I had to wash the wagon out down at the river.
So that gives everybody a little taste. The show is set in 1875, correct?
Yeah, just before the Kick and Push, the Kingston Pembroke Railway opened.
Yeah, so the nickname for the Kingston Pembroke Railway is the Kick and Push.
Yes, it is.
I just learned that was the nickname that inspired the Kick and Push Festival. Cool bit of history.
it's definitely a bit interesting. I'm on the Irish side of everything. We have one Scottish performer in the show who is Jake Henderson. Playing this sort of role, it's been interesting learning all of the history. I've been on this project since it was workshopped last year in April. And so I've spent a lot of time just getting to hear Craig talk about all of his inspirations and all of the research he's done. And the characters in the show are based off of characters from a photo by the entrance to the Kick and Push Trail. But they aren't real people. But when you actually listen to the show, about like 90% of the things you're hearing about different historical contexts and even names that are mentioned are actual names who are who were found in historical records when Craig was doing his research.
Wow. So did you yourself have to do a lot of historical research, or was it kind of provided to you by Craig through the script?
I didn't have to do too much research, mainly because Craig is a professor at Queen's, and so he really knows how to give us a lecture. And so he, throughout the process, has sort of updated us on everything. Like, we refer to a photographer pretty regularly in the script, and he told us one day, he was like, by the way, just so you know, this photographer's name that I picked out, Henderson, he actually was a photographer from Montreal at the time who would have been taking pictures of this area. And so he's really put in the time and effort to make sure this thing's as accurate as possible while still having an entertaining plot.
And I feel like it adds another level because it is a site-specific work.
Yeah, it's really special to be performing it too. Like, I know when I workshopped it last year and heard there might be a performance, I was just thinking to myself, oh God, please let me be a part of this. As my first thing, like, coming out of Queens as an actor, getting to do something that's so rooted in Kingston's history has just been such a special thing.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your acting history. You graduated Queens, and how did you find yourself in this role?
Yeah, I found myself in this role because in my second year at Queen's, I took a course with Craig Walker at the Shaw Festival, and so I got to spend a lot of time with him there. And then near the beginning of my third year, he approached me and he said, hey, would you be interested in helping me out with a project? And at the time, I didn't know what it was, but it ended up being the initial read-through of this. And all he told me was, would you be okay with helping me out with a project? And then a few weeks later, I got an email that said, get your Irish accent ready. And we did just two rehearsals and then read it publicly at the Theatre Kingston studio. And then a few months ago, he reached out to me again and said, hey, would you be around this summer to do the full thing?
And here you are.
Yeah, here I am.
The show opened a few days ago. How have the performances been going?
They've been fantastic. Everyone who's coming out has been really enthusiastic. We recently added a canopy so that people aren't sitting in the sun, which is really nice, because I can tell you that being on the tracks, there is not shade. It is a very, very hot place to perform, but it really gets you into the feeling of being a worker on a railroad track back in 1875.
Probably gives you some sympathy and lets you get into character.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever worked on a site-specific theater project before?
I have not really. This is my first time doing one.
So how does it kind of differ from, you know, a classic stage where you have wings and the ability to get off stage?
There are so many things that differ. The lighting's never consistent. There is so much around you that is playing a part in the performance that you can't control. Like, one night we had an apple fall, like, exactly when everyone went silent on stage. And it's just like, there are these little moments that you can't account for at all, and the rehearsal process just absolutely cannot prepare you.
This is maybe a bit of a side note, but now I have a question. Is there like wildlife around the performance area?
We haven't had anything crossing the track, but I know, like, our backstage area, quote unquote, it's just like in some foliage next to the path. And so there's definitely been, you'll hear a lot of cicadas. There are birds. We have been checking every day to make sure we don't have ticks, because we're just like sitting in the long grass. So there's definitely wildlife involved in this thing.
Were you rehearsing at the railroad, or did you kind of have to adapt your rehearsals to the site when you got closer to the show?
We definitely had to adapt closer to the show, because most of our rehearsal process was spent in that awful heat wave. And so our wonderful stage manager, Kevin, he went out to the site and he did measurements of the tracks and all that. And so he taped it down in a room at Queen's University where we rehearsed. And then when the heat wave came, it was far too hot to be sitting in a room at Queen's. And so we moved to our director, Craig Walker's basement, and we just rehearsed there with his dogs running around all the time. And so the spaces sort of got tighter and tighter, and the tracks sort of got further and further out of our minds. And then the week we were going to start shows, we arrived at the tracks and went, oh yeah, we don't get air conditioning. Oh yeah, the tracks aren't just tape. We have to step over these things. And wow, there's a lot more space than we accounted for. And so the rehearsal process was really great for like getting a beginning grasp, but that last week was absolutely vital to getting us on our feet.
How are you feeling about, you know, things kind of wrapping up?
It's sad in a way, but I also work with the KTA, which is like the parent company of Kick and Push, I guess. They run under the same thing. I've worked with them as a theater critic for a little while. And so I know right when this show finishes, I'll be ramping up my activity as a critic, reviewing shows for the Fringe coming up.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is about the Kick and Push Festival in general. Have you ever been a part of the Kick and Push before as a theater person in Kingston?
Somewhat. Last year, I produced and performed in a show in the Kingston Fringe Festival, which is also under the purview of Kick and Push. They do so much in this festival, so their festival is the parent of another festival.
So what were you working on in the Fringe Festival?
Oddly enough, another show about trains. a friend of mine wrote a show called The End of the Line, and actually another performer in Providence and I were the only performers in it, Jake Henderson. And it wasn't about trains in Kingston specifically, but we just, we had a great script from one of our friends and we decided to produce it. And the Fringe is the most affordable way to do that.
Most affordable way to do that. It's a lottery system of whose play gets to perform. What's the application process like?
Yeah, you pay a small fee to get entered into the lottery draw. It's pretty inconsequential. I think for us it was around $30. And then they pull names literally from a hat. I think Theatre Kingston usually uploads it to their Instagram or their Facebook. And if you get pulled, you pay another small fee to just cover the venue costs and all that. And then you're a part of this festival. You don't have to worry about box office, advertising, anything like that, because they'll handle it all for you.
That's a really good opportunity, especially for college-age students just starting out with their theatrical careers.
With the festival, they've only really announced Providence so far, but I know for a fact that a lot of things are coming. And like with Kick and Push, because it's site-specific and immersive and so many different like sort of genre-bending things, you can really find it anywhere. Like in past years, there have just been people in these like really extravagant costumes walking around Kingston. And so if you're just in the city and you can't make it out to see Providence, wander around downtown a bit, and I'm sure you will catch some Kick and Push performers. Yeah. And then as for the show, I don't know if Craig had a chance to mention it, but we have fantastic musicians involved.
I wanted to ask, how are the musicians involved? Because it's not a musical, is it?
It is not, no. At the beginning, they play some lovely music, and then we've had a song composed for the ending of the show by John Burge, who is another professor at Queen's who Craig's worked with a few times on different projects. And so we end the show after all of the action's wrapped up with a lovely song. We have two wonderful musicians, Jan LeClaire on accordion and Karma Tom on violin, who just are fantastic. And so they've been given this sheet music by John Burge, and then he's left in a lot of room for them to improvise. So every time you hear their songs, it's going to be just a little bit different.
And a really lovely way to wrap up a show. Outside with music.
Yeah, it's awesome. Catch whatever you can. Definitely go to some Fringe stuff. You can get like passes where you can see a few more shows for a bit cheaper. And the great thing about Fringe is it is just artists trying stuff. And so half the stuff you'll see will be wild and you won't know how they came up with it. And some of it will really stick with you.
Something different, something for everyone. Well, Aidan, thank you so much for joining me and telling me a little bit about the show and yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. And I can't wait to see you in the audience.
That was a conversation between myself, Ellie Sturton, and Aidan Robert Bruce. Aiden is an actor in Providence at this year's Kick and Push Festival and will also be working as a critic as a part of the Fringe Festival running under the Kick and Push Festival. Now let's take a look at a show happening a bit later on in the festival, Love in the First Degree. Joining me today is BC Gorey, who is the writer and director of this show. We talk all about its unique style, how it was created, the importance of interactive theater, and the court of public opinion. So today I am talking with BC Gorey, who is a co-founder of 6AM Productions and will be having some work in the Kick and Push Festival this year.
Yeah, 6AM Productions is a theater and production company that I started with two of my very close friends, Anna Villeneuve and Jose Andres Bordas, in 2019. And we focus on immersive and interactive theater. And since we started in 2019, we've done over 600 shows together. We've got to perform in some really cool places, and we've got to perform for some really cool audience members. We've done shows for like Apple and Amazon and Ubisoft, and it's been quite a journey. And after we started in 2019 here in Kingston, we focus our attention elsewhere, and we're really excited to be able to bring our shows back to Kingston, where it all started.
I was looking at the website 6AM Productions, and there's a big focus on team building exercises, or theater for team building team events. Is that still?
Yes. So during the pandemic, we pivoted away from live entertainment to virtual events and virtual team building. And by doing so, we were able to expand quite rapidly. And during a time when a lot of theater companies and production companies and actors and artists were finding it really difficult to find work, we were actually expanding quite rapidly. We went from a team of four in March 2020 to, by the time that we hit September 2020, we had a team of about 45 people. We had a roster of 35 actors, and we were able to pay them $50 an hour. And we were doing about, at our peak, we were doing 60 shows a month. Wow. And over that time, we were able to refine and polish and continue working on them. And our most successful and popular event and show at the time was Love in the First Degree, an 80s wedding murder mystery. And over the time, that was something that we really were able to build up. And now we're bringing it back to Kingston for the first time since 2019. And we're excited to show everybody just how fun the show is.
That is the show that you will be presenting through the Kick and Push Festival.
Yes.
Well, how did you decide to get into the Kick and Push?
I have worked with the Kick and Push before. I worked with Liam Carey last summer for the Kick and Push. I was an associate producer, and I saw that they were doing really cool work with highlighting Kingston artists. And they're a festival that also focuses on immersive and innovative theater. And 6AM Productions, that's our focus. We are a company here in Kingston that is trying to create and innovate with theater, especially immersive and interactive theater. And we like to say that we've sort of gamified the theater experience for modern audiences. And it felt like a perfect fit. We really wanted to bring 6AM back home to Kingston and show how hard we've been working on everything. And it felt just sort of like the perfect opportunity for us to do so.
Is Love in the First Degree an interactive show?
Yes. So Love in the First Degree is a campy, interactive courtroom comedy set in the neon-drenched 1980s. It's a court case that depicts what should have been the most radical wedding of the decade, until the groom dropped dead mid-toast. Now there's eight wedding guests who are standing accused of murder, each with their own motive, means, and something to hide. What makes Love in the First Degree really thrilling is that the audience gets to decide the outcome. So moments before the show, a new suspect is secretly chosen to be guilty, and only that actor knows if they're innocent or guilty. So that means that there's no two performances that are the same, and the actors are going to be improvising and adapting as the case unfolds live in front of the audience. The game aspect of it is that the trial plays out over 7 rounds. And at the end of each round, the audience votes to remove one suspect from the trial who they believe is innocent. So the stakes are constantly rising as the suspect list shrinks until only one remains to face the final verdict. It's part game, part performance, and all 80s excess. Love in the First Degree turns theater into a live mystery thriller where the audience holds the gavel. It's an evening that we're hoping to be as electric and unpredictable as the 80s itself.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
It's truly so much fun.
I love the 80s. I love the wedding. I love the high drama. I love that the actors don't even know how it's going to play out. Like being in the room, or is it performed in a room? All of the Kick and Push shows are...
We're in the rehearsal hall at the Tet.
Okay, so the rehearsal hall at the Tet. I am so excited for the energy in that space during this show.
It is. We just got access to the space yesterday. We had our first rehearsal in there, and it was electric. The actors are so funny. I haven't laughed like that in such a long time. And it's truly a testament to this show that the fact that I have seen the show well over 400 times, performed by 35 different actors, and it's still cracking me up to this date, it's truly a testament to how funny the show is and how great these actors are.
How are you involved in this show? Are you directing or for this run of the show?
I developed the concept of the show called Judge and Jury, which is this audience-based interactive trial setting. And we have about 6 or 7 of these different trials in this game called Judge and Jury, and Love in the First Degree is one of the most popular versions of the game. I also wrote Love in the First Degree, so I created the concept, wrote this show, and I'm now directing it, and it's truly been so much fun. Judge and Jury, we started doing that in 2016, so it's almost been a decade of doing these shows here.
Wow. Okay. And now it gets to show at the Kick and Push Festival. When are the show dates?
We are opening August 14th, the Thursday, and we run until the 17th. So that's the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Tet Center in the rehearsal hall.
The structure of the show produces a different result and a different plot each night. How are the actors equipped to handle that?
The actors, we've spent so much time with them, preparing them for the show. And what we hand them before we even begin is their character book. And this book outlines who their character is, their mannerisms, their history, the timeline of the evening, and then it has a list of secrets in it and how important it is to keep that secret to themselves for that character. The actors having all that information then practice again and again and again how to bring out those secrets, when is the appropriate time to do so, and if it's appropriate to do so. There are some nights where some secrets just never get revealed, and it's up to the actors to make those decisions. I'm always telling them, follow the story that's being told, and what that ends up producing is a show that's pretty much endlessly rewatchable. And we often have people coming back to watch it a second or even third time because they want to see who else could have done it, why they could have done it, what they've missed. It's really interesting in that way. And the actors have to think quickly on their feet. They have to be able to think as another person altogether and balance both sort of plotting and scheming as the character that they're playing, but also pacing the story and making sure the audience is following along. So it's this really cool actor experience where as soon as the show begins, it's in their hands. And as a director, that's very scary, but it's in their hands until it's finished and they're telling the story from start to end. And this cast that I have right now, stellar, hilarious, very talented actors, and I have no doubt that they're going to be able to crush this.
And how did you choose the 80s to, like, as the backdrop?
It's a little bit of a silly story. So we started these Judge and Jury shows in 2016. Our first one was Evacuate the Dance Floor, which the court case there, it takes place in a nightclub in the early 2010s. And then the second one was Shooting Star, which is one on like a reality singing competition. And then the third one was Love in the First Degree. And it all started from this song that I was listening to on repeat a bunch at the time, called Love in the First Degree by Bananarama. And in the song, they just say, "And the judge and the jury all put the blame on me. I'm guilty of love in the first degree." And I remember sitting and being like, oh, they said the name of our show in here. And then the more I thought about it, I realized, who doesn't love the 80s? Who doesn't love the drama, the flair, the colors, the campiness to it? And I realized that the era just lent itself so nicely to what we were trying to do with these funny, silly shows. And then the next step is thinking of, how can there be 8 people wanting to murder one person all in the same room? What setting can that be? Which is why we ended up settling on a wedding, because just so many people attend a wedding and there's so much drama and stakes and emotions all running on a wedding day. So that's how we picked the setting of both the 80s and it being at a wedding.
What do you want people to get from a show like this? Or what do you hope it gives audience members?
I love this concept of the court of public opinion. And it's something we play with quite a bit in our shows. Whether someone's innocent or not, how a group of people can sort of hive mind and create a story around someone who might have nothing to do with the actual events of the evening or sort of the crime that was committed. But a group of people can concoct the story around them or believe lies or mistruths or sort of people trying to make them think something else. They can fall down this rabbit hole and end up convicting someone who had nothing to do with it. And that happens quite a bit with these shows, which is really fun and interesting to watch. But I would say what I'm trying to do the most with them is to allow people to have that experience, to fully give in to that kind of judgmental mentality. We've created caricatures of these people, and we encourage the audience to yell, to boo, to cheer, to call out their questions throughout the show. And we immediately break that sort of wall between actor and audience before they even arrive. They're interacting with the suspects before they reach their seats. And we want them to walk away feeling like they were judge, jury, and executioner of a big, important mystery. They heard the facts. They made a judgment call and decision, and they had a lot of fun doing so. It's just a really rare experience to be able to do something like that, but incredibly fun and so satisfying, even when you get it wrong.
I guess that's one of the beautiful things about interactive shows. You get a say in, I'm going to rhyme, and where it goes, but but yeah, you get to feel a part of it and included and important. But you're also doing this in a theatrical context where you know it's okay to be silly and have fun with it. So it feels safe and you just get, it's play. You get to play.
And that's exactly what we're going for. We want it to feel more like a game than a theater show. We say it's more similar to like an escape room than it is to traditional theater. And that's because there's just this game element to it. So by using your phones, the audience is going to be voting on who they think is guilty, asking questions, getting themselves involved in the rounds, and really steering the path of this show. They are choosing what characters stay in the story and what characters are removed. So the audience could mistakenly remove the murderer in the first round and just leave, you know, a cast of really innocent suspects up on that stage fighting for their lives and pointing fingers and, you know, pleading with the audience that they're innocent until the jury ultimately, you know, accuses the wrong person, which is very fun to watch. Or they could, you know, follow the trail all the way to the bitter end and actually catch the murderer and have this big triumphant moment at the end where they followed all the right clues, they asked the right questions and figured out who did it and why.
How often do you find that the correct suspect is chosen?
We try and have a ratio of about 40%. So we want about 40% of people to correctly identify who the culprit is, but we end up in about 40%, we've narrowed it down to. That's because if it's too easy, it's not very fun. And if it's too difficult, it's also not very fun to be able to do or feel like you're lost or you have to think too much. Yeah. So we go for this 40% where it's just a little bit harder, but is very doable. So if you're paying attention and watching closely, it's very easy to figure out who the murderer is every night. But you have to sift through all of the lies and finger pointing and red herrings to sort who's actually at the center of this crime.
Is there anything I miss that you'd like to mention about the show or the festival in general?
One thing that we really try and hit is that this isn't just a regular sort of murder mystery that you've seen at a dinner theater or down at a friend's party. It goes so much farther than that. And the way that we have it structured is that the story falls into the audience's hands from start to finish. And we have these highly trained actors leading them through this experience in this court case. And that's what makes it a little bit different, is that it's not a whodunit in the regular sense. It's a court case where the audience is judge, jury, and executioner, and what they say goes, whether or not it's true. In a regular murder mystery, they're sort of leading you down the path, you get all the facts, and you have to figure it out based on what you're given. This show, if the audience doesn't figure it out, or if they don't fall down the right path or go down the wrong rabbit hole, they won't get enough information to figure out who did it, and we let them make those mistakes. If they don't get the right information or if they follow the wrong suspect, that's on them. That's real life. That is how the court of public opinion works.
On another level too, like obviously it's a very lighthearted and joyous show, but it kind of does make me think about our judicial system and how do we come to conclusions about people. You see it all the time on social media, like hive mind, one person says something and everybody's rolling with it and all of a sudden it's this.
It becomes truth.
Yeah, it becomes truth. It's a really interesting concept and kind of a great light way to bring it to people's minds.
One thing we always really try and do, or I try and do as a writer, is ground these campy concepts in real world logic. So what they're doing, what they're saying might be very silly, their reasoning and their motives and their value systems are very grounded. So it feels like you're navigating this world that is very campy and can be very funny, but you never feel like it is too outlandish or too outside of the realm of what could really happen.
Mm. Yeah, so audience members can still use like their logical reasoning to kind of say, oh, I think this person is guilty or innocent, but they're still having fun. I guess one thing I'm curious about is just the physical layout of this show. Like, does it happen kind of in a stage setting where the audience is more removed, or is it because a show that is so interactive, I wonder how does that look when you're actually in the space?
Yeah, that's one thing that I've really been focusing on with our technical director, Wilding, as we prepare for the show, is how do we create that barrier so there's a clear and distinct performance space, but also that the audience feels like they're not distinct and othered by this world that we're creating. And how we do that is when we're welcoming in the audience, the actors are right there bringing them to their seats, sort of telling them like, vote for me, I'm innocent, I didn't do it, as they're sort of getting adjusted and acclimatized into the room. And then we've created a very traditional courtroom setting with sort of seats for the suspects and then the jury seats, the jury box, as we call it, with little rows of chairs behind it. But the actors are encouraged to use the whole room during the show. So you could be sitting there and one of the suspects sits beside you and starts gossiping about another suspect that's on the stage. Or they might pull a suspect up onto the stage with them to recreate a scene. And all of this is voluntary before the audience enters the room. We ask them if they want to be interacted with or not. And audience members who don't want to be in, they just want to observe, the actors are instructed to not interact with them. They wear a little X on their hand. They're known not to talk with those audience members. And they still have just as much fun and can be as involved as they would like through the voting process and through the digital questioning. They can ask through their phones questions to the host of the show and they'll read them out for them.
That was my other question about the digital aspect. You were saying that you can vote online using your phone. What is that technology?
Yeah, so we have a software that we're using that is essentially a polling software. And at the end of every round, we ask the audience, you know, who is the most innocent and who would you like to see removed from the trial? And the audience all votes on their phones. They sort of pick their options. We have these screens in the room that are showing all of the suspects' headshots with their names. And they vote that on their phone. And we collect all that data within about a minute. We process it really quickly, give the information to the host, very similar to like an American Idol moment. So they come up on stage and we have the dramatic lighting and the reveal of who is being eliminated. And then the sort of the next round begins. And through this software that we're using, the audience is able to continually be asking questions throughout the show. And it gets sent directly to the host on their device, and they can see the questions that the audience is asking. The audience can also react at any point to the show. So if something's happening on stage they're enjoying, they can use the heart react, and we can see it on our end, or the dislike, or the angry face, and we can see it in real time as the show is happening, and so can all the suspects. So it's a way to be involved without having to actually speak or move out of your comfort zone. So the show is an immersive show for everybody, not just the people who really like to get involved in theater. Yeah, and that's something that we really focused on because we really wanted to make sure that everyone felt safe and comfortable at the show, which is also why we have different kinds of seating. So we have like bean bags and things that sit on the floor, and we have an access kit so people can fidget, they can stand, they can move around. It really isn't your traditional theater space. We encourage movement. We encourage the audience to be as comfortable as possible. If you want to stand the whole show and pace back and forth and shout at the actors, do it. If you want to sit on the floor and stretch or lay down or, sit very like on the edge of your seat in the front row, like that's all a possibility for you. And we really prioritize the audience comfort because they are part of the show. And if they're uncomfortable or cringing or not fully buying into it, the show all falls apart. Mm-hmm. So before we can even begin, we have to acclimatize the audience, get them settled in, and make sure they're really, really comfortable and excited for the show that's about to happen.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And anybody listening, I think you should go out and see it too. Sounds like it'll be different every show. So you will be getting something truly unique and fun.
It's a great experience, a fun game, and truly something that you'll be thinking about for a very long time.
Amazing. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That was a conversation between myself, Ellie Sturton, and BC Gorey, the writer and director of the show Love in the First Degree. It's an interactive theater piece that will be running later on in the Kick and Push Festival. If you love the 80s, courtroom dramas, and a good laugh, then this one is for you. Now, just a reminder about another great event coming up this weekend. It's the Tet Summer Pop-Up. There will be outdoor art and craft vendors, open studios and drop-in art activities, a community sing-along with Fiercely OK, and a Tet Tree of Life yarn craft station. It's free and all ages, except for the community singing event, which has tickets ranging from $7 to $30 available for families and individuals. If you're around Kingston on August 4th from 10 to 2 p.m., make sure to stop in at the Tet Center for a day of fun with your family and friends. And that's all for this week's installation of The Kingston Curator. I'm your host, Ellie Sturton, and you can catch me each week Friday at 3 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Have a great weekend.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Adonis, a super fun, groovy, and very danceable funk pop anthem about admiring a person who seems too heavenly to be human. The subject, Adonis, possesses unshakable, authentic confidence and a striking, undeniable beauty, but yet that Adonis is also humble and fun, sweet, and down to earth. Keep up with the latest from this local funky band by following them on Instagram at NiceOnTheBand. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Adonis by Nison on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Give me something real. Tell me how you feel. When you look at me like that, confidence is steel.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present At the Door, the latest single by Nolan Hubbard and Sit Still. This is your laid-back summer indie track about breaking free from the daily grind and rediscovering your true self. Sit Still and Nolan Hubbard's unique styles mesh seamlessly, blending catchy grooves with heartfelt storytelling, perfect for windows-down drives or relaxed moments in the sun. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream At the Door by Nolan Hubbard with Sit Still on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.